Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here, you need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome into another edition of the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. I'm your host, Neil McCready. Today, my favorite kind of show. It's been about a month. We typically do this about once a month. Jeffrey Wright of 92.9 ESPN Radio in Memphis joins, and we will talk about a number of things. We're going to talk some NFL, a little Major League Baseball, some NBA. We've pretty much touched on the coaching carousel as much as possibly it can be touched upon. Mario Cristobal gets the Oregon job. That's really the only new development since Jeffrey was on the Oxford Exxon podcast. So we're going to touch on some other things that we haven't spent much time on since we've been so college football focused. We'll get to that in just a minute. First, let me tell you about the Oxford Crystal, Highway 6 West in Oxford, right next to the Oxford Exxon. It's Christmas shopping season. If you are among the idiots that get out and about to do your Christmas shopping, I like the internet. This thing called Amazon has been good to me. I've gotten mine done. But if you're not one of those people, if you're one of those brave souls that wants to be a renegade, while you're out and about, you can fill up your vehicle at the Oxford Exxon, and then you can fill yourself up at the Oxford Crystal. Pick any five of your Crystal favorites, five for $5, the mix five for $5. You can get a breakfast to get yourself going each in the morning before you hit the stores, a loaded hash brown scrambler bowl combo that includes sausage, gravy, eggs, cheese, and crispers, and it's served with a small coffee and a small crispers there at the Oxford Crystal. 79-cent crystals all day, every day. And you can still, if you need a little holiday flavor, you can still get the pumpkin spice milkshake or hot cocoa at Oxford Crystal, Highway 6 West in Oxford. We're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900 is the number. You call that number, you ask for Corey Clark. You tell Corey what new Ford you are looking for, and Corey will send you a quote within 15 minutes. It's that easy. It's very, very efficient. You can then, once you get your quote, it's up to you. There's no haggling. It's just right to the bottom line. You get your quote, and you can shop it around if you'd like, or you can take that off your list of things that are hassles, and you can let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many other podcast listeners. Take the hassle out of the car buying experience and enjoy your new Ford today. Again, 662-257-1900, and at the end of that deal, you tell Corey, say, hey, Corey, I heard about Clark Ford on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden, and that's $500 off the bottom line on your new Ford. Mr. Wright, how are you, sir?
Man, I'm doing great. Happy Friday to you.
It is. I'm so glad it's Friday. The kids have one more week and 2 days before the break. The good news is next week, there's no soccer. There's no baseball. I get out of the carpool business for like just a week. And I'm not complaining because I know what everybody says. There'll be a day that you wish you could drive somebody to practice. I know that will be true. But there's also, you get that little break from it, and it's nice, man.
Do parents like is under the table, do parents like Christmas break as much as the kids? Like, because it does feel like that's the perfect break. Because I feel like in the summer, it's so long, like you're just ready to get them back out of the house. But I feel like Christmas break, it's always, there's like, I don't know, I feel like there's a little more relief on Christmas break.
Yeah, summer's too long, and by the end of the summer break, you're ready to throw them back into a school. Christmas break's okay. You don't really see, like, Campbell's driving, which means that Caroline can get anywhere she wants to go. So the only one that I'll really see the whole time is Carson. But, you know, they sleep till 10:30, and then they stumble around until 1, and then they leave, and they come back. But, yeah, it's a nice little break.
I always thought the best self-help book would be writing a book, treat every day like you did Christmas break when you were in school. Because you make the most of every single day. Like, you cherish every single day off. Like, you maximize every single second, whereas summer break, you just take it for granted.
Yeah, summer you take for granted, and then you look up and it's over because now they go back to school so early in August that it's over. I mean, you have June. Always, I remember as a kid, June you sort of enjoyed it, and then the calendar flipped to July, and you went, oh, God. And so you started – you did sort of maximize the days in July because you knew that you were on the back end of summer vacation, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and the other thing about July was July usually was the overlap between – at least in high school and middle school, it was the overlap between baseball and football. And so you were doing both and you were miserable in both. Like you weren't committed to doing either. And so like, it, I don't know, to me like that always made July the worst. And then August, you kind of had the anticipation of getting back more into a routine. So there was that made it a little easier, but you're right. I do think if you're power ranking the summer months, it's got to go June, August, then July.
Yeah. The only thing about August was the before you started school, like the people that lie and go, oh, I loved camp, I loved two-a-days. No, you did not.
No, two-a-days.
No one loved two-a-days.
That's why I you know, whether or not you want to let your kids play football is to me, that is a 100% an individual choice. But for me, it was like the one good thing I will give football credit is it is a good life lesson that football practice sucks, and it's the only thing in life that you practice, you know, it's the only sport where you practice infinitely more than you play, and that's kind of life. Like, it's, you're getting yourself prepared for big moments and to deliver in those big moments. But you're right. I mean, camp sucked. Camp sucked, and we had 2 weeks of two-a-days, and then we had 1 week where it was basically you got there at 7 and you didn't leave until 7, and they can't do that anymore because of heat rules. But that week of the year was just always so miserable. Like, no, absolutely not. I'm with you 100%. And let's be real. Football practice sucks.
Yeah. You look back on it and that's when the team building stuff happened. You know what I mean?
Because yes,
we're all miserable together.
Yes.
And you learned how, frankly, coaches are, hey, go 100%. But you learned how, like, you had your hitting partner.
Yes.
You learned how to make it look like you were doing the tackling drill the right way, all at the same time sort of protecting your teammate so that they, in turn, would protect you.
Yes.
There was that. That's when the team building happens, I think.
That and then the periods where you have some downtime and you're all so miserable, you're just trying to figure out ways to make everyone laugh. Like, those were the big ones. But on your hitting partner thing, 100% agree with you, unless you have the coach that realized what you were doing. Shout out to Bubba Burr, because whenever we would do that drill, I had the same partner every single time, and we really did figure out a way to make it look good. But then he figured it out, and then he started switching us up, and he started, like, to punish us. Like, he made us go against, like, the best linebackers that we had or the best hard-hitting safeties that we had. So shout out to Coach Burr for that.
Yeah, I think my defensive backfield coach, Coach Dunbar, knew what we were doing and just after a while was like, F it. Let them. You'd get that, and as you got older, you'd get the younger guy that was trying to impress.
Yes, the hero.
I hated Tuesday afternoon hero. Man, it's like, come on, what are we doing?
Our worst day was Wednesday. Wednesday was the full pads day, and we did goal line drill and Wednesday sucked. And especially in Memphis, and you can relate in Louisiana, man, it doesn't cool off until really October. Those September practices suck too.
Oh yeah, September's brutal.
Yes.
That's why you had to win Friday night in September because, I mean, I was old school. I mean, if we won, our practice on Tuesday was different. Well, if we won and played well, our practice on Tuesday was different than if we won and played poorly or if, God forbid, we lost.
I had a very... I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, early in the season, there was a real emphasis on being crisp and playing well, because there was some self-survival in it.
I had in my 4 years of high school, we had four very different teams. Our freshman year team, because of we only had six seniors, the freshmen all had to play, like, practice with the varsity, even though we were playing JV, but, like, we all just practiced together. And so that team was miserable because we were 4-7, and the coaches were miserable. And ironically, at the time, Coach Alston, who the field is now named after at MUS, was he was under a lot of heat. And I know people laugh, like, high school, it's like, eh, that's his, that was his gig, and it was a good gig. And we were under a lot of heat, and it was just a miserable, miserable existence. And then our sophomore and junior year teams, I mean, we only lost, we went, I think we went 22-2, and there weren't a lot of bad days during the season. So those were better, but it still didn't make up for the fact that, man, football practice just sucks. And I heard y'all ranting about it. It's so true. Like, the only thing that's worse than football practice is spring football practice.
Oh, that's the absolute worst. It has no redeeming value at all for anyone.
Zero.
None. Zero.
You don't, I mean, I get
zero. And
I can, the only one I can point to that we got anything out of it is one year we were so bad inside the 10, and all we did spring practice was come up with a goal line package and run the goal line package. And so we did come out the next year, and since that's all we had done, we had a identity in the goal line. We got out of that, but I mean, the practices itself, I mean, good God, no, absolutely not.
Speaking of football and football practice, the Saints and Falcons played last night on Thursday night. I know this is not an original hot take. Lots of other people have said this. You know me, I don't watch as much NFL as other people just because my schedule doesn't necessarily allow it. That was a sloppy game that would have been a much more aesthetically pleasing game. I'm not talking about the outcome. I'm not even talking about the crazy, stupid referee at the end that made sure that we all knew that the line judge or the side judge decided a freaking football game. I'm not even talking about that. So with the aesthetics of the football game, we were robbed of what should have been a pretty good game on Sunday or Monday by playing the damn thing on Thursday. And I know everybody says, nope, don't complain. Thursday night football is better than no football on Thursday night. And while I understand that, I submit that if we're really going to have Thursday night football, we've got to come up with a better way of doing it where players are not as fatigued and slow and sluggish as they were. It's difficult for me to take a league seriously when it talks about
safety.
The safety of its players. When you're going to play guys on Thursday night after they've played on Sunday, where it's very obvious that they're not anywhere close, Jeffrey, to 100%. Not close.
No, I mean, let's get real. The only time they care about player safeties is if it affects their bottom line. If it's player safety that could lead to lawsuits, could lead to financial, you know, hurting the bottom line, then they care about player safety. But they don't care about player safety when it opens up a new market for some extra money in the TV deal to add Thursday night football. To me, I don't know about you, but I think the easiest answer is, and if we really are, like, put your money where your mouth is. If you're caring about player safety, why not have two bye weeks? Have an extra bye week, and then have the teams that before they play on Thursday night, have them have their bye. They get to play on Thursday night. They'll have 11 days of rest or whatnot, and then they get another 11 days of rest before they go play the next Sunday. And I don't think if we extend the regular season one more week, anyone's going to complain.
No, I mean, if anything, people will be happy about it. Maybe you, I mean, there's an answer here. Take away one of the stupid preseason games and start the regular season a week earlier and build in the extra open date. Hell, if you want to, Jeffrey, take away two preseason games. Start the NFL regular season 2 weeks earlier and build in another open date. There's ways to do this.
Yes, I mean, to me, like, even if you want to extend it on the back end, it's you know, I just think that we've created, as it is with football, we have, especially us, you know, that are in this business, there are two seasons. There's football season, and then there's waiting for football season. And sometimes we find ways to occupy our time better than others. But I mean, Neil, I don't know about you, like, I know you don't, like, love college football as much as probably the passionate fan, but this Saturday is a depressing day, man. You don't have, you know, you got the Army-Navy game, which is always cool to watch, but the game itself is usually never very good to watch. And it's just a bummer. The weather's going to be a bit bad this weekend, so you can't go out and do something. Like, I don't know, it's a bummer for me. And if we find a way to like have an extra week of football, like I don't know how anyone's going to really complain about that. And so to me, there is a better way of doing it. The problem with it is it's all got to be collectively bargained. And the last time we had a CBA in the NFL, the owners, like, it was like the negotiation where Andy Kennedy had with Pete Boone, where Andy Kennedy came in wanting less than he left out walking with. And Andy Kennedy in that situation is the NFL. Basically, the players actually had a little bit of leverage, but they gave up what leverage they had to get lesser practices. Like, they could have, to me, like, there has to be more balance on the fact that, you know, the players are what we're watching. And especially when the NFL is going through a lot, this is kind of a very transitional period for the NFL. We're already seeing Peyton Manning's done. We're probably going to see no more than a year or two of Eli Manning. Probably about the same for Ben Roethlisberger. These new quarterbacks are intriguing, but I don't know if we have another Aaron Rodgers coming up the ladder here. And interest is already dwindling in fantasy football, which was always a huge market for the NFL and to create interest. People are getting more and more bored with that by the year. And to me, you have to start figuring out ways to make the product better right now, because as you're mentioning it, man, what we watch week in, week out, it's not great.
No, like this would be a weekend. And I know at some point the NFL adds some Saturday games, but Saints Falcons on Saturday would have been more entertaining than Thursday night. It was a sloppy game between two teams that they don't like each other. It's a rivalry that the fans get into, as we saw on Twitter last night. And I don't know, just it kind of felt cheated a little bit,
especially
for lack of a better word,
especially for a divisional game. Like, I don't know, like, I like that game. You know, if the Falcons win out, they're going to win the division. And I don't know, I just don't like when in the NFL there's such a reward for winning your division. You get the home playoff game. The biggest deal is you get the home playoff game, but like I don't like cheapening such a pivotal game. And I understand, you know, the NFL's from the business side of it is concerned about, well, we want the best game possible. And you know, it was an entertaining game from a score perspective only, and honestly, from a social interaction perspective. Like, other than that, it was not great.
So, did that game change anything of the way you view the Saints going forward? That's kind of the team that I'm not going to say I'm a fan, because we've covered this before.
Yeah, they're fun to watch.
But, you know, they're fun to watch and they're interesting, and I have Louisiana ties and stuff, so I kind of follow them. I didn't turn that game off last night thinking, they're screwed. I still think if Kamara had been healthy, they win the game, and that they're probably going to be okay in the playoffs. It sort of dovetails with the conversation we had on the Oxford Exxon podcast on Thursday. The NFC is really up for grabs.
No, it didn't change anything from what I view of the Saints, other than I felt like, didn't you feel like last night really did show just how important Alvin Kamara is to them? Because beyond just the fact that guy is electric and he is a very, very difficult matchup for defenses, you see also how much it affects Mark Ingram. And I'm not saying that Ingram didn't have a good game, because, you know, I thought one of the biggest plays of the game up until probably one of the last games was the check down pass that Mark Ingram caught, and he just fought his way for a first down after probably... He turned basically a 4-yard gain into a 12-yard gain to keep that drive alive. But you did see, like, he just wasn't as effective running the football as he's been all year. And like, to me, that was my biggest take on that is, you know, whoo boy, the Saints, they can really not afford for that concussion thing to become a lingering issue for Alvin Kamara.
Oh no, they're not going far without him. He is the wild card element in their offense that makes them balanced, that makes defenses have to respect where he is. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. He can do so many different things. He can create in the open field. When he's not there, they're kind of back to being what they've been the last few years, which is still very good on offense, but they don't have the balance. I mean, Ingram's a good back, but Ingram is complemented so well by Kamara. And when you take Kamara out and Ingram has to be your feature back, I just think they become far more predictable as an offense.
Did you have the same feeling of, because you played some quarterback too. I don't know about you, but, and obviously I never played at anything that resembles Drew Brees' level of talent, but I got some PTSD back to, I had a specific moment on that last pass. We were doing a 7-on-7 here in the fairgrounds. It was before my junior year. And our coach just like kind of, I guess he was trying to like test me or whatnot, just kind of, you know, and it's 7-on-7. They were trying to get everyone some reps. And he just yells out, "Right, get in there." And then he called the play. And our play was a quick little stop blade route, hitch route. And the blade is essentially a seam. And I just remember thinking like, I was trying to have like put my helmet on, buckle up my chin strap in as calm of a manner that didn't say that I was freaking out. And the last thought before I called for the snap was, the seam's always open here. The seam's always open here. And I mean, snap straight to me in the gun. I turned to throw to the right. I acted like I was quickly looking at the little first read to move the linebacker, and he didn't move an inch. And I'm just winding up to throw it, and I cannot stop it. I'm throwing the seam route. And as soon as I release it, I just yelled out, "Please, God, drop it. Please, God, drop it." And just, he caught it in stride, took it back to the house. Like, that was the same thing I felt like Drew Brees felt like there. He's like, you knew, like, he's probably run that play 1,000 times, and it's always open. And it wasn't open this time. And he made the predetermined read. And on top of that, he threw the ball too low. But that gave me some PTSD there.
And you know, I bet he still hasn't slept. He's watched that on film now about 50 times, and he's just resisting the urge to hit himself because
they were going to win the division.
He knew
last
on
night.
That play. Yeah, and you knew what he was thinking before that play is, hey, if there's nothing here, throw it away, kick the field goal, we get overtime, we'll be all right. That was the one outcome that he couldn't, that could not happen, and yet he did it. It just, you know he was sick about it.
The only other feeling that kind of is similar to that is when you're trying to throw a runner out and you know right when it comes out of your hand that you just sailed it into the outfield. Like, that's the only other feeling. And it's not so much like when you're trying to throw a runner out who's stealing. Like, maybe like when you back pick and you're going to try to kind of make a big play to kind of change the momentum. And like, say it's a back pick to first, and you just know right when it comes out of your hand that thing's going to the bullpen down the right field line.
Yep. All right. We didn't talk about the AFC the other day. Just real quick, is that, in your opinion, is that New England's to win? Is it just still, they're still head and shoulders above everybody else?
You want to go conspiracy theory with me for a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
So Gronk is suspended for this week. When people were going off about the length of the suspension and whatnot, Steelers and the Pats play next weekend. I believe it's next Sunday on Sunday Night Football. And Gronk is suddenly available for that one. Any chance that big marquee game, because that's probably going to determine who has home field advantage. And I'm not saying that the Steelers are better than the Pats, but one of my biggest takeaways from the AFC this year has been how much better of a home team that Pittsburgh is. And that's not a scorching take, but the reason why I say how much better they are is because offensively, when they're at home, they can run the no huddle stuff that they like to do. And that's where they just score in bunches. And then when you see them go on the road, you know, they're looking at, you know, if they get into the 20s, they had a pretty good night. But at home, 40 is not out of the question. And so to me, the only chance that the Pats have of not repeating in the AFC right now is if they have to go to Pittsburgh.
So you think the NFL wants
Gronk
Patriots
to play that
back
game
in the Super
Bowl? Yes, I think they know it's better for business. And I don't.
Yeah, I'd love to sit here and tell you that it's not, but it is. I'm more interested in it if the Patriots are in it because it gives me someone to cheer against.
That it's the whole thing. You got to have a villain. I mean,
yeah, I don't. Pittsburgh's not a good villain for me, and then none of the NFC teams are particularly good villains.
No, I mean, I guess the biggest quote unquote villain, and it's not even that he's a villain; it's that he's so polarizing, positively and negatively, is Cam. But I mean, Cam's looking at best being the wild card team, and you know, when you look at the Vikings, what's to hate about the Vikings? That's a 10-2 team that has Case Keenum as their starting quarterback. I mean, that's as milquetoast. If anything, it's a likable team. The Eagles, even though Philly and Philly fans aren't particularly likable, that team's kind of likable, and they got the good young quarterback that everyone's so highly of. The Rams are fun because the more and more they win, I feel like the less and less likely we are to get Jeff Fisher back as a head coach, which I think is a win for the NFL. You know, you look at the Saints and Breeze, they've always been a popular team amongst casual fans. I think everyone would kind of enjoy seeing if the Falcons gave themselves an opportunity at redemption. I think everyone enjoys seeing that story. The Seahawks, I guess, are probably the best example of the villain in the NFC, and that's a pretty villain.
Yeah.
That's
all
like in
those
Christopher, like in all Christopher,
be endearing storyline.
I'll say, like in all Christopher Nolan movies, he always has an unnecessary second villain that's just never as good, and you're like, I don't understand the point of this. To me, that reminds me of what the Seahawks are as a villain.
Yeah, there's you're right. They're as close as you can get to a villain, and they're not very hateable.
No, I mean
Pete Carroll, you kind of laugh at him. Russell Wilson, sometimes you want to pick on him, but he's all right. And the rest of them are fine. There's just nobody to hate. Like, Belichick is hateable. He's almost like Saban. It's easy to cheer against Alabama in the playoffs.
Do you know what I mean?
I mean,
You're
either for Alabama or you hate them.
Do you think there's any possibility that, you know, I mean, honestly, one of the happiest college football's ever been was last year when Alabama got beat on the last play of the game and everyone's just like, finally. I wonder if there's an element from watchability if you got to have the villain in there. And if, I mean, I don't think that crept into the committee's mind, but I can't help but wonder, did it have something to do with it? Because you look at the other three teams, there's not really the hateability factor. I mean, Clemson is not all that hateable to the casual fan. Georgia.
Not hateable. Everyone likes Dabo Swinney so much.
Yeah, and then Georgia's the new, you know, I think everyone's always hoping, like, is there ever going to be a true rival to Alabama? And I think people are maybe hoping that Georgia could be it from the casual fan. I'm not saying SEC fans, but, you know, like, perhaps. And so there you get the new up-and-comer. And then Oklahoma has the Heisman Trophy winner, or will be tomorrow. What do you think about that game? I know we'll talk about it later, but one of my best friends in the world is a massive Georgia fan, and he wasn't even picking at me. Like, this wasn't even like a button pushing. This was a legitimate thing. He legitimately believes that a blowout is possible, and the blowout being Georgia beats them like 35-14.
If you told me there's a blowout, I would absolutely say Georgia blew Oklahoma out, and here's why.
Okay.
Georgia's going to be able to run the football on Oklahoma, and Georgia's going to be able to present an athleticism on defense that I worry a little bit will neutralize Mayfield, get them into some third and longs where he's scrambling, and while he makes plays. I think it was when they played Clemson a couple of years ago, and Clemson ran away from him in the second half.
It was
a little bit of that. It's a little bit of that that I'm concerned about for Oklahoma's sake.
I can see it. I also think that Oklahoma's a little bit better on defense than they get credit for. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that the Big 12 has the monsters underneath that the SEC has on the lines. But the SEC doesn't have the monster offenses that the Big 12 has. Like, everyone like wants to point to numbers in which they give up. Like, you look at, statistically, you look at the teams that they've played, like the major college teams that they've played. Oklahoma's played, I think it was five top 30 offenses, and Georgia had played, I believe it was four 100 or worse offenses. Like, I don't know if Georgia is prepared for the scoring machine that Oklahoma is. And to me, Georgia's biggest weakness is their secondary. And I just don't know. I don't know how they're going to respond when they think they have Mayfield corralled and then he somehow escapes and just makes an absolute dime down the field time and time again. Much like you saw Auburn get so frustrated with them last year in the Sugar Bowl. And I know this Georgia team's better than that Auburn team was. But to me, like, I can definitely see, like, I almost think that if the blowout occurs, that it's just Georgia, or that it's Oklahoma scoring so many points, and then Georgia panics. Like, they get down two or three scores, much like we saw with the Auburn game in Auburn, and they try to kind of throw their way back into it, and then Fromm just can't do it.
If you told me there was a blowout in either playoff, I would say it's Clemson blowing Alabama out because Alabama's offense stagnates to the point that they simply can't score and Clemson pulls away in a little bit more explosive fashion than Auburn did. Otherwise, I think we're going to get two pretty competitive games.
Doesn't the Clemson-Alabama game feel like the weird thing for me is, and maybe I've talked myself into it, but for as exciting and as high scoring as those games have been the last 2 years, like, I can easily see this being like a 17-14, like, just kind of slog fest in which both offenses are afraid to take any type of chance. And because the truth is, neither team probably really trusts their quarterback. And I can just see it becoming just a ugly, ugly, like, slug fest.
Oh, yeah, that could easily happen where Clemson gets ahead 7 to 10 points, or Clemson's trying to nurse a 3 to 7 point lead all the way to the finish line by being super careful, and Alabama doesn't really want to put the game in Hurts' hands because he's already bailed him out once this year, which feels like his limit.
Yes.
It you know, I mean, he
beat Mississippi
State. Otherwise, I can't believe I'm saying this because they're the best program in college football. Saban's the best college football coach ever. The numbers support that completely. I don't think this is one of his better teams. I think his best quarterback's on the bench. His best quarterback's going to win the job in the spring, and they're going to be dangerous as hell next year. But it doesn't feel right. Now watch him go win the national title, but
I do agree with you.
I don't know.
I do not think that, like, if you start back from, like, the 09 team, I think this is one of his weakest teams, if not the weakest team. The one difference, though, I think, is that I think the rest of the field is also weaker than it's ever been. I have a really tough time believing that the team that has far and away the best player, which is Oklahoma with Mayfield, I have a really tough time believing that that doesn't matter. Because we've seen in the playoff last year, Deshaun Watson was the best player. He won. The year before, Elliott and Cardale Jones, who people didn't have enough film on and didn't really know how to stop him yet, they were just a monster. And then you can go back, I guess, the Alabama year. Watson, I mean, if Alabama doesn't get the onside kick, and then Clemson remembers to just cover O.J. Howard. I mean, Deshaun Watson was so unbelievable that game that he was probably going to win that game.
Yeah, I mean, if you told me that one guy dominates it, obviously I would say it's Mayfield.
One last thought before
Georgia's in.
Well, I was going to say
just because Georgia's, they're so athletic. That's the one thing about Georgia that Kirby's done a. the Georgia Network has done such a good job of getting athleticism at every position. Georgia looks like right now a more athletic Alabama.
I can buy that, especially I'm not wildly impressed with Alabama's linebackers this year.
Well, they've had so many injuries.
That's fair.
And they're saying that they're
going
to get back. Yeah, but I mean, how much rust are they going to have? How fresh are they going to be? No one knows. They haven't played in a long time. I mean, I like Clemson in that game, and I think I like Oklahoma in the other game, but I think it's going to – I think Oklahoma-Georgia, Jeffrey, has a chance to be one of those games that we talk about for years.
And I hope so. I mean, I guess this would be like the last point that I'm making. Like, you look at Oklahoma's defense when they this is both teams against major conference opponents. So it throws out the games that don't matter. Oklahoma's allowing 144.2 yards per game. That's 27th in the nation. Through the air, they're allowing 240, which is 45th in the nation. 384 in yards per game, that's 34th in the nation. And then 25 points per game, that's 31st in the nation. Like, I just don't think the defense is as bad as I think there's the perception that the Big 12 is this awful defensive conference. And clearly, the emphasis in the Big 12 is not the same as it is in the SEC, and honestly, even in the ACC. But I don't think it's as bad defensively as like the Pac-12 or the perception is.
Well, we're going to find out. I thought the SEC was bad this year, so judging what Georgia did or what Alabama did is they're getting benefit for reputation. The Big 12 this year had a lot of good offensive teams. They had some weird defensive teams. The games are different. Mayfield's a stud, though, and they went into Ohio State and kicked their ass. And that was one of those games that when it happened, you said, boy, they're for real.
Well, like, we also look at some of the best
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry, there's the feedback, so that's the only reason why I thought you were done. When you look at, I think you and I both respect the job that Gary Patterson can do defensively, agreed?
Oh, for sure, yeah, he's tremendous.
He had two shots at Mayfield this year, and he just threw his hands in the air. Ohio State defensively, they're as athletic as, they're as athletic as anyone, and Mayfield lit him up for 40 plus. And then even in the loss, like you think Iowa State, who had at times this year a top 10 defense, I mean, they lost not because Mayfield didn't put enough points on the board. They lost because their defense did get torched by a quarterback they weren't prepared for. But like, to me, like, you look at some of these actually like real defenses, and man, he is, they haven't had answers for him.
Yeah, you nailed it a minute ago when you said Georgia's a scoring machine. They are a scoring machine. They can score points in bunches. They can score them fast. They can. Georgia, Oklahoma. Yeah, Oklahoma is a scoring machine, man. They can light you up, and they're almost like a baseball team that gets going. And once that lineup starts going, they start feeding off each other. They get scary.
The Astros.
They can put 60. Anyone, yes, they can light you up, and for Georgia, they're very good defensively. They love to pressure the quarterback. They're very athletic, like you said. But they are susceptible in the secondary a little bit, and it's I don't know. I'm one of these. I'm partial to the Rose Bowl. I like the Rose Bowl. I like that setting and all that stuff. And you typically get classics there, and I think we're going to get another one. If you told me it's one of these 41-34 classics out there, I would go, yep, I see it. And I think Fromm's not – he's a freshman, but he's a kid who plays with a lot of confidence. I don't think the moment's going to be too big for him. Georgia's going to try to run the football, control clock, and make Oklahoma, when they get the football, press a little bit. Like, hey, we got to score. We're not going to get it as much. Go for it and try to make – they'll see if they can make Mayfield make mistakes. I don't think he's going to make many. I think it's going to be a really good game. I don't see a blowout either way.
Yeah, I actually think coming into this, I think we have the best four matchups that we've seen in the playoff thus far. Like, I do think – and I watched both games be snooze fest, but to me, this feels like the best opportunity to actually have two quality semifinals.
Yeah, I'll be surprised if we don't get them. I really will. And it's just going to be fun. I mean, I know everybody down here wants to see the Georgia-Alabama final, and it would be fun to watch Saban coach against one of his guys for a championship, but I think we're going to get the other one. I think we're going to get Clemson-Oklahoma, which will be one hell of a matchup.
I'm good with that.
All right. First, I'm going to tell you about LB's Meat Market. It's 2008 University Avenue. You talk about classics, and you talk about consistency. You get that from Greg Jones and the people there at LB's. It's across from Kroger, 2008 University Avenue, 662-259-2999. It's the holiday season. You want that beef tenderloin. You want the standing rib roast. All of those things. Get in touch with Greg. Let him know. Make a pre-order. You can pick it up. He'll have it completely ready, trimmed, packaged, everything. You will not regret it. It is the freshest cuts, the best cuts you can find anywhere in Oxford. Check out their wide selection of sausages as well, whether it's some appetizers, whether you're throwing a Christmas party as an hors d'oeuvre, that kind of thing. Great pork sausages, beef sausage, of chicken sausage, which is my personal favorite. They've got them all there at LB's, all sorts of flavors. When you go into LB's, there's a beer fridge on your left. Grab a six-pack. It's normally $8. Tell Greg that you heard about it on the Beer Garden, and it will be just $6. A six-pack for $6 at LB's. Also, here comes the trivia question for the week. You're the first person to answer this question. You got a hashtag Beer Garden. Send it at me on Twitter, at Neil McCready, and also at LB's Meat Market. I'll get it to Greg Jones. It's a $25 gift certificate, which is pretty cool this time of year, especially at LB's. The question is, what Los Angeles – we're about to talk about Giancarlo Stanton in a minute, the National League MVP who's on the market. What Dodgers catcher won three MVPs in the 1950s before an accident ended his career in 1957? Send me that name. What Dodgers catcher won three MVPs in the 50s before his career was ended in 1957 by an accident? Send me his name, hashtag Beer Garden, and send it at Neil McCready and also at LB's Meat Market. The winner, the first one, gets a $25 gift certificate from LB's. All right, let's talk Giancarlo Stanton in the last 15, 20 minutes. Get to a couple of different topics, but I want to get your thoughts. I know your Cardinals are involved. The Giants are involved. Broke last night that he prefers to play for one of four teams that are on his no-trade list. And yet none of those teams, the Cubs, the Astros, they make no sense at all for Stanton. That leaves the Dodgers, who would love to take on Stanton, but the Dodgers, their tax if they take Stanton's contract gets crazy. And then there's the Yankees, who I think Jeffrey would prefer to wait a year and make the big splash with Bryce Harper. What do you think happens there with Giancarlo?
It just feels like back to the West Coast. And I know what you're saying from a financial standpoint, but man, I just can't see... I can't see either team letting money be the exact issue. And maybe I'm completely wrong, but I don't foresee the Dodgers going, you know what? Now's the time that we say too much.
It's just so much money. But you're right. I mean,
they have
they didn't win the Series. They want to win a World Series so bad, and they've committed so many resources to do it. But, you know, they've got the Kershaw situation they've got to address here in a year. he can opt out of his deal and cash in at least one really big time. They've got an unlimited revenues, but the tax does make it where at some point it is self-defeating.
I agree with you, but like the Dodgers, A, have one of the most lucrative television deals, and B, they have one of the biggest stadiums. And to me, Giancarlo Stanton in that market where he's from, like, I can just see that financially it's not. To me, the team that's going to be penalized the least for signing Stanton is the Dodgers.
Okay, so but let's say that, here's my question. If you're the Giants, if you're the Cardinals, you've gone down this road, you've now invested basically a month of your offseason. I know they've done other things, but that's been the focus. Do you continue to wait it out, or do you say, okay, we can't do this anymore, we can't risk coming up empty, and those prospects or whatnot that have been tied up in a Stanton deal, do you do something different? Do you get involved with Manny Machado? Do you spend the money on Josh Donaldson? I guess this is more about the Cardinals at this moment, but if you're the Giants, do you have to start moving in a different direction?
If you're the Cardinals, I think you have to, because I think it's pretty obvious that you're not going to beat the no trade clause. And to me, it's been pretty apparent that, you know, he doesn't want to play there. And so at a certain point, you are wasting time now. And you know what? You did, in my opinion, you did your job. You made as competitive of an offer as possible, and you tried to keep your team in it, but you're dealing with a reality in which the player has control at this point, and he just doesn't want to play there. So if I'm the Cardinals, I move on. The Giants is a fascinating debate, because if you're the Giants, what is the incentive right now of signing Stanton? Because I feel like the Giants are now at rebuild, and I don't think Stanton's a guy that you rebuild with.
Yeah, I think they're in that deal where you have Buster Posey in the prime, the backside of the prime of his career. You've got Madison Bumgarner, who when healthy is one of the dominant pitchers in baseball. You still have this group. I mean, I'm a huge Brandon Crawford fan. You have this group that last year the season fell apart early because of the Bumgarner injury, but you've invested a lot of money, and I don't think they want to rebuild. I think they want to jumpstart, and Stanton would do that for them.
But don't you feel like that pitching staff is still too far away? Like, I get the Bumgarner injury, but it wasn't just Bumgarner's injury last year. And that was a bad baseball
team. Oh, no, I agree. It was a bad baseball team. I saw them in person in September, and that was not a good baseball team.
Like, to me,
and they're in a division that are better than them. The Dodgers are obviously better. The Diamondbacks are better.
Yeah, I mean, to me, like, that's what it comes down to, is the fact that, okay, if we're going, for the Cardinals, I do think Stanton is someone that could help the Cardinals. And so I do understand their desire to try to get in it. But you've reached that point where it's just not going to happen. So now you're wasting time and effort. In my opinion, you got to move on. Like, you mentioned the Yankees. Like, if I'm the Yankees, I'm not getting involved in this, because it does feel like if you're not the leader in the clubhouse to get Bryce Harper, who I think is a more complete baseball player, you are certainly one of probably no more than three teams that have the realistic best shot. So I'm not involved in this from their perspective. But the Giants, to me, it's like, if I'm going to, like, I have to think about it from a business perspective. And if I'm going to try and make this happen, I have to ask the question, for what? And the idea for the Giants, the standard, is to be a championship team. I don't think Stanton makes them a championship team. So I ask the question, okay, what's the point?
Yeah, and it's a good question. I mean, Stanton dramatically changes things. I mean, you put him in that Yankees lineup, my God, they are explosive. He changes the Cardinals completely. They need a power hitter. He makes a ton of sense for them. And then with the Dodgers, it's just an excess of riches. And like I said, I don't think the Astros or the Cubs are in that market, and all the reports indicate that they're not. I'm going to ask you about Shohei Ohtani in a minute. First, let me tell you that the podcast is brought to you by Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. It's 30 years old this year, one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All the underwriting and processing is done in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. It's the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. Ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate. But if rates go down before you close, you can get the lower rate. Email him at jlowe, that's J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com. The podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you're a business with a high-ticket product or service, HVAC, dentist, surgeon, flooring, furniture, or more, Ben Brown and his team have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders with one very easy online application. With rates as low as 4.9%, terms that extend to 7 years, loan amounts up to $100,000, and credit scores down to 580, they will get more of your customers the money they need so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben Brown, 443-935-5013. Ben's waiving the setup fee for Oxford Crystal Beer Garden listeners. That's a $500 savings, so call him today. The podcast also brought to you by Strategic Partners and Media. SPM is a full-service advertising agency that works with businesses of all types, big or small, from Fortune 500 companies to startups. SPM can help your advertising needs for TV, radio, print, and every facet of social and digital media. Look, here's why SPM is really good and different than the other ad firms. They handle everything in-house. They don't sub their work out. The writing, the production, the editing, it's all done solely by their staff and crafted uniquely for their clients. And it doesn't hurt things that it's an Ole Miss grad and a Mississippian who's a partner in the firm. So give them a call. See how great they are. It's Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. All right. Any thoughts on Shohei Ohtani? I'm following him with interest. I mean, for the last couple of years, I've joked about how I wanted him to be a Cub. I knew he wasn't going to be a Cub. He's a two-way guy. He's going to go to an American League team, I would think. He's going to be a really fun experiment. This is a guy that has been Japan's Babe Ruth. He's a young guy. He's very smart. This is a lot. He's got a lot kind of going on for him. It's going to be a really fun guy to watch in Major League Baseball. And I kind of want him to go to the American League if he's not going to be a Cub. I want him to go to the American League so I can sort of have a new team to follow, because I don't know why. I just kind of am intrigued by the kid. And I want to see him do well.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but my first question with him is, how good is he? Because I know the pedigree, I know the resume and whatnot, but when we look at actual Japanese stars to come over, people that played in the Japanese league, the only one that I feel like has been a true difference maker and a true impact guy has been Ichiro. Like, Dice K, I mean, it was a fun little, like, mania, kind of like media extravaganza, but the substance really wasn't there, and I understand he battled injuries, and that's unfortunate, but to me, like, I just look at a lot of the guys that come over, and it's just, it's always falls flat, and so that I think that's the biggest struggle that I have. Like, When the hype train got rolling, I think that's kind of always my struggle, because you and I have talked about this. I don't have the fear of missing out. I have the fear of buying in. Because to me, the fear, like this, the feeling that you get when you buy into something and someone or some idea, and then it inevitably disappoints, that level of disappointment is so much more than the disappointment I have of the fear you have of missing out, like, ah, damn, I missed that. You know, damn, I missed that bet. Like, I'll put it in terms that are very fitting for me. I regret bets when I believe in a team and they get beaten more than I regret a bet where, man, I knew that game was going to happen. Like, to me, the loss hurts way more than the missed opportunity.
Yeah, I've read some reports on him that they believe in an American League team that he hasn't seen enough major league caliber pitching, that he's going to really struggle. He's going to want to pitch every fifth or sixth day. So he has to have the way it's going to be structured is he's going to end up being a disappointment at the plate. That from a hitting standpoint, he would be far better off actually going to a National League club, the Dodgers, the Giants, whatever, where he would get those at-bats the days that he pitched, maybe get some pinch hit at-bats here and there. You know, because you watch kind of the modern manager now, especially early in a game, he doesn't want to utilize his bench yet. So you have a guy like Otani who's in your rotation.
Sure.
You could send him up there in the fifth or sixth inning of a game and let him have a pinch hit at-bat. You know, and then as a pitcher, he has a higher upside. Most teams say that most major league people say that he's major league ready as a pitcher. Maybe the fastball's a little straight, but that he's got really good command. He's got a great velocity. He can reach back for a little more. All that But you're right. You go back and you look at like Kosuke Fukudome when he came up to the Cubs.
All time name.
He was really
greatest
good
name of all time.
It was a great name. And when you could send your kids to school in a Fukudome jersey in Alabama, it was quite confusing for people, and that was fun.
Yes.
That was fun. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm just interested in him. I think he ends up in Seattle, which is good for the Mariners. They need something to make their organization pop a little nationally, and he probably would at least make them a curiosity. So I'm interested in him. All right, last thing before we let you go. Your Grizzlies, I think they're 8-16 now. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
We talked about this the other day, and I think they won the night that we talked about it. It was the day of the Christmas parade here. What are they going to do? The Gasol thing happened. They fired Fizdale, which I didn't completely understand, making him a scapegoat. It wasn't his fault. What's the feeling as to what the Grizzlies are going to do? Other than probably beat the Thunder tomorrow night, because the Thunder are, it's too early to say this, it's about a month away from saying, this might not work.
I disagree with your thought on the Thunder. In fact, if you want to get the boy, I'd recommend making the trip up, making the hour trip up, because you're going to get to, I feel pretty confident that you're going to get to see a win, because the truth is, Neil, this roster right now, especially without Mike Conley, Neil, it's just not good. I mean, you know, I agree with you on the David Fizdale timing, but I think I agree with you for a different reason. The reason why I did not particularly care for the timing is because I think it was short-sighted in the fact that people did not recognize what it was going to do to Mark Gasol. I do understand why they did it. And I talked to two of my buddies that are in coaching, and then one of my buddies that's involved in kind of like a video role, more or less, in the NBA. And they all said the same thing. They said when Fizdale sat him in the fourth quarter and made the public statement of when Mark tried to go in multiple times to get in the game and he sat him down, they both said that was a suicide mission. And that was Fizdale's way of saying it's me or him. And I think Fizdale's smart enough to know, he's been around the NBA long enough to know, especially today, the franchise is always going to take the player over the coach. And so it was a suicide mission. The only reason why I do agree with you, I think you can decide at that moment that this is done, but I would have waited and let losses were coming. And I would have waited and let a few more losses occur so that I could distance myself from Mark having the reputation of being a coach killer, because in my opinion, he's not a coach killer. And in my opinion, that was the classic example of two guys that had very strong convictions and different stylistic beliefs. And so that's what made it. That's where it just inevitably came to the point where it was not fixable. But if I'm the Grizzlies and I have to keep as many options as possible, the last thing that I want is Mark Gasol having the quote-unquote coach killer reputation.
Oh, there's no doubt. Gasol doesn't want that, especially going forward in his career, maybe into the offseason where he says, hey, it's time to get out. Can someone take me? There are already health issues. If you have a reputation for being a disruptive guy, which is the polar opposite of what his reputation has been the last 6, 7, 8 years.
Here's my fear with the Grizzlies. Let's rewind the clocks back to 2015 when you and I were sitting at my kitchen table podcasting. And I fully understood your side, but I always thought the moment that Durant went down, the best result for the Thunder, because to me, you got Durant and Westbrook. Your whole goal at that point is to find a way to win a championship. I thought their best chance to position themselves to win a championship at that point was to tank. And I understand that you can't tell Russell Westbrook to sit. And I don't know how you reasonably were going to be able to manage that situation. But in my opinion, that's kind of why you get paid to run an organization. Like that's the whole point. You have to figure out a way, because the worst thing that happened was the Thunder finished ninth in the West. So you don't make the playoff, you make the run and you fall short. And then you wind up with a campaign he's a great Memphis kid, love him to death, but campaign's not making a difference for the Thunder as it pertains to winning a championship. My biggest fear is that the Grizzlies are coming into the exact same scenario, because as soon as Mike Conley comes back, the Grizzlies are going to start winning some games. I think you have to figure out a way to navigate this. I think there is such thing as a tasteful tank, and I actually think the Grizzlies have the ability to tastefully tank. You have this core of new guys that are unproven, and I think that you can start playing them much, much more. Deontay Davis. You start playing, now that Dylan Brooks has kind of come back to reality, keep playing Dylan Brooks. Say that you're trying to, you picked up the option for Jarrell Martin, and you're trying to figure out what he is. Are we going to make this a long-term thing? You start playing these guys much, much more. Keep playing Ben McLemore, because you're quote-unquote trying to figure out whether or not he's going to be someone that's part of your plan next year. And those guys just aren't good enough right now, and I think you have to keep losing. And because to me, the Grizzlies, because of the contract situations with Parsons, with Gasol, and with Conley, to me, the only chance that they have to make a run here in the next 2 years is to find a way to get into the top five of this lottery and get a guy. And that guy can be your fourth guy. And now you've positioned yourself to, even though he's a young rookie, it's not like you're asking him to carry the load. You're asking him to come in and be a piece. And I think that that's a realistic option. And then I think you position yourself for the next 2 years to finish out the Conley-Gasol run with a real chance to be competitive.
No, I look back on that conversation and I still am bewildered at how you would be able to tell Russell Westbrook, hey, shut it down. I know you love to compete. This is what you live for. Shut it down and don't hold this decision against us in a couple of years when we ask you to sign an extension. But there is absolutely no doubt that what would have been in the best interest of the franchise would have been tanking, getting a lottery pick, and being able to add an actual meaningful piece to a nucleus that at the time was Westbrook, Durant, and Ibaka. There's no doubt that's true. Zero. You're right. I still don't know how in God's name Presti would have been able to do it. But you know what? You're right. That's what you pay them to figure out. But it would have been, knowing what I know about Westbrook, the person, from just reading about so much about him, following his career for the last decade, I still don't know how the hell you would have done it. But you're right. You're absolutely right. There's nothing worse than being ninth or tenth in your conference. Nothing.
Well, the only way,
it's the worst spot.
The only way that you endure it is you are going to have to go through some horrifically low and uncomfortable moments throughout that year. But the way that you endure it is when you get to the draft, and then the next year when it starts, you start getting the wins again, and you start realizing we have a chance, then it's all forgotten. It's the whole trust the process BS. But I mean, you know what I mean? Like, that's what it all is. I mean, and it is uncomfortable, and it's difficult. But again, like, that's why you're a millionaire. Like, that's why you're getting paid millions and millions of dollars. So, like, to me, like, that is your responsibility, because at the end, you're not beholden to the player. You're beholden to the organization and positioning that organization to be in the best realistic possible chance to be a contender.
This podcast has been brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air has been serving Oxford and the surrounding area for the past 26 years. I've used Comer. You can take my word for it. Their attention to detail, their customer service, their work, it's second to none. It's an American Standard dealer, but Comer works on any maker model, residential or commercial. Customers get same-day service, free estimates on new units, preventative maintenance contracts, and more. ComerHeatingAndAir.com. Check out their Facebook page. Mention you heard about them on the podcast. You get $20 off. You can contact Eric at 662-934-3846 or Shane at 662-832-8749. All right, my man. I really appreciate your time. It was so generous of you to give up your time here on a Friday. I hope you have a great weekend, and look forward to seeing you here soon.
All right, my man. I enjoyed it as always.
Talk to you soon. Bye.